So, as we know, we're in the second portion of the book of James. Last week we started, if you remember, in James 1, 2 to 4, it must have been, because it's 5 to 8 this morning. And if you weren't here last week, for those that weren't here, we have hammer and nails in this log, okay? The idea of this, James says in 2 to 4, if we remember, consider it pure joy, a sheer gift, when you face trials and temptations in life. That's my paraphrase, not there. But remember we said that the nail has a purpose. The hammer has a purpose. The nail will never understand what the hammer does. It could never get it, because all the hammer wants to do is hit the nail in the head, isn't that right? All the hammer's job is to hit something, to smash something. So the nail could never understand what the hammer is doing. That was the gist of what we were talking about last week when we say, consider it pure joy. And my big thing was, remember the nail has a purpose, the hammer has a purpose. That was the idea. The nail is in the hand of the carpenter, and the hammer is in the hand of the carpenter. Remember, that's what we said. The carpenter knows what to do with the nail and knows what to do with the hammer. In the hands of another, this is a great tool. In the hands of another, this is a great item. And that's what we were trying to say. And what we're trying to say is, think of that as life. Think of the nail as life. Think of the hammer. When the hammer comes and the hammer hits us on the head. And Paul, or James says, consider it. What does he say? Consider it a sheer gift when we go through trials. Why? Because maybe we can see God in the trial. That's what James was getting at there. Don't lose your joy, we said, in the trial, because God is up to something. God always uses what was meant for evil. For what? For his glory and our good. That was the gift of James. And over the next few weeks, we're going to look at that a little. So we are. We're going to look what that looks like. Remember the big idea of James and the underlying title, I would say, is how well do your actions mirror your faith you proclaim? That's the underlying subtitle of James. How well, during trials, through testing, through everything that you're going through, in life in general, as a believer in Jesus, how well do your actions mirror your faith that you proclaim? That's a great question, isn't it? It's a great challenging question that James wants to bring to us. So verses 5 to 8, James continues on. He says these words, if any of you lack wisdom, you should ask God, who gives it generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt. Because the one who doubts is like a wave in the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect anything they receive from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. I'm not going into that part of Scripture this morning, but I want to sit around this morning, this command that James gives us. If any of you lack wisdom, you should ask God, who gives it generously to withal without finding fault, and it will be given to you. And I don't know about you, and I know just from my own personal experience, if you're going through a hard time, okay, if you're going through a testing time, if you're not going through a testing time and everything's okay for you, this still applies, okay? If things are getting on top of you, if you have decisions to make and need direction of any sort, and you need God to give you some sort of guidance on what to do next, and you need clarity, there's nothing worse, is there, than trying to make the right decision, especially in the big stuff. They're the hardest decisions to make is the big stuff, because they're going to affect us hugely. We go through testing. And even in normal circumstances, think about the decisions you have to make daily. They're not always easy to make, sure they aren't. But think about it when your head's, I'm going to say this word, when your head's fried a little. How hard it is to make a decision. It's really, really tough. And James then tells us in this verse, straight after the trials and all of that, James says this, if you lack wisdom, if you don't know what to do or the right thing to do, he says to ask God, and he gives it generously. Do you ever wonder what that means, what James is talking about here? Wisdom will always point us to God. That's one thing we should know. To the one who gives it generously, it will always point us. Wisdom will always point us towards God. Who better to interpret our circumstances than God? Let's look around that. And for centuries, the greatest philosophers have endeavored to figure out the best and honorable ways to live, haven't they? For centuries we're being told the best way to live and what they would say, where they all agree on. If we're to be successful in life, if we're to do something in life, we must know what it means to be wise. That's what the great philosophers of our world tell us. If you're going to do something in life, if you're going to be wise, you need to be wise. That's what they would tell us. There's this pursuit of wisdom, they would tell us. And it's something to be commended for. History testifies that much of humanity has found wisdom without ever finding God. History will tell us that most of us have found wisdom without ever finding God. That's true, isn't it? That's a true statement this morning. The Apostle Paul will condemn the wisdom of this world. In 1 Corinthians 1, he says, "For those who live according to earthly wisdom, it's those who despise and reject Christ." Proverbs 1 then shows us what wisdom should look like. We know this. I've done it last year, I think, a wee bit around wisdom. It shows us what to think about wisdom. It says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The dictionary, which is the world's view of wisdom, says this. It's the quality of having an experience, of having knowledge, and of good judgment. That's what the dictionary says wisdom is. But God's wisdom in Scripture tells us this. Wisdom that is directly related to living in accordance with how God has ordered the world. That's what godly wisdom is. Wisdom that is directly related to living in accordance with how God has ordered the world. So there's two types of wisdom this morning. And I'm going to try and take a wee bit of a different view in the talks you've maybe heard on wisdom. I'm going to try and take a different angle in this a wee bit this morning. So there's two types of wisdom, okay? With the wisdom that comes from the world, which we know about, and there's a wisdom that James tells us comes from God, and we're to ask for that. We have a wisdom from God, but our wisdom, we're told, that comes from our intelligence, okay? For those of us that are intelligent out there, okay? And there's a few of us in the room, okay? Few of us that are intelligent, but there's a wisdom that comes from our intelligence. There's a wisdom that comes from God, and there's a wisdom that comes from us working things out. Let's look at wisdom from a world point of view this morning. Think of this here, okay? I'm not going to mention names today. Think of a big company that delivers parcels to your door, and it's not your job, okay? This is a different company, okay? Think about it delivers directly to your door. Think about this. This delivery company, then you order it in an hour, and it's nearly in your bathroom the next day. You know, they're that good at delivering stuff. When you order stuff, it comes directly the next day. Think about that company. Think about one man that changed the landscapes of how parcels are delivered. Think about that. We know who the guy is. This guy would need to know about marketing, wouldn't he? He would need to know about advertising. He would need to know about shipping. He would need to know about online retail in general. He would need to put together a team of people who get to, influence and manipulate the marketplace. He would need to influence how we think and how we shop. He would need to know all of this stuff. And as far as I know, and as far as I can see, this big corporation, this online retailer, does not have a relationship with Christ. As far as I know. Maybe people working it do, but this guy that I think I know does not know Jesus and does not know Christ at all. Yet the Scriptures would teach us that Jesus is the foundation of all wisdom. This guy that set up this company is a wise man. In many aspects, he would have a lot of wisdom to get done what he needs to get done. Yet Jesus says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. John Piper, who I like, who's not with us anymore, he defines the greatest human wisdom as this. Here's what John Piper would say the greatest human wisdom is. It's the factual knowledge, the situational insight, the necessary resolve, all together has the likelihood of achieving the same intended righteous goal. The factual knowledge, you need to have the factual knowledge. You need to have an insight into things. You need to have the resolve to see it through. Altogether has a likelihood of achieving the same intended righteous goal. And that's what I want you to concentrate this morning is, has the likelihood of achieving the same righteous goal. Think about that for a minute. So what does this mean? So this guy that starts the online retail business that we know, and I'm not going to mention the name, the argument in his, and working stuff out to get a product out there, is he achieving a righteous goal in his wisdom and what he's set up and what he's doing? Is there a righteous goal at the end of his product? Is there a righteous thinking at the end of this? He has all the factual knowledge, that's what we know. Simply put, he knows his stuff, this guy. Wisdom will always require us to understand the product, the marketing, the shipping, and all that goes with that. But factual knowledge isn't enough in wisdom. The need for a situational insight, the need to know and see through something is required. Those involved in this company need to know this, how to stir the marketplace. They need to know when to put the prices up, and they're good at that. They need to know when to promote these changes and then apply the knowledge to all of this. It's still not enough in the worldly wisdom to have all of this. It's not enough to call this wisdom. For wisdom to be considered here in this model, to know the right stuff, how to apply this, it's another thing to act upon things, isn't it? It's okay to know stuff. It's okay to have an insight into things. It's okay to have all of that. But when we have to act on something, that's a different matter, isn't it? That's when the hammer hits the nail, isn't it? That's when we need to know stuff. It's one thing to know what to do, but to act on that and all we know, to put our actions into our knowledge. Now, that's the test I think James is saying here, okay? To put our actions into knowledge is what this is all about. Remember the big point we have in James? Do your actions mirror your faith? Do your actions mirror your faith? Matthew 11:19, Jesus said these words, the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they said, here is a glutton, here is a drunkard, here is a friend of the tax collectors, and here is a friend of the sinners. And he said these words at the end of this. But wisdom is proved right by her deeds. But wisdom is proved right by her deeds. What's Jesus saying here? Wisdom will always be proved right by her actions. Wisdom is actually shown by its fruit. It's by the result we know if it's wisdom or not. And I think a lot of us in here would know that anyway, wouldn't we? We know the decisions that we make, whether they're wise or foolish. See, we can all have the facts this morning on what we need to do. We can all have the insight and think, maybe that there. We can have the resolve to see things through. We can have the power, let's say that, to see it through. We can have all this going on for us, and we can have... Here's the thing, we can have all of that stuff this morning, all this fact, all this situational insight, and we can have an ungodly ending to it all. We can have the wisdom to see things through, but not have God in it. That's what we know, don't we? We can have all the right facts about doing something. We don't need God for any of that. We can work stuff out on our own. We can do things on our own. We can have all of this stuff going on without God. We can know the best time to do something, to accomplish a task. We can have all the willpower in the world to see it through. But here's the big point this morning. What's your end goal? What are you trying to achieve? What's the outcome when you're asking for wisdom? Is there a righteous goal behind it all? See, wisdom is always justified by her works. Let me say it this way. Let me put it another way. What's your righteous goal when you ask God for wisdom? I'm going somewhere with this, okay? It might just seem a wee bit out there at the minute, but I'm going somewhere. What's your righteous goal when you ask God for wisdom? What to do? God, what do I do? What's your righteous goal? It's what James is saying here. If any of you lacks wisdom, it's a godly wisdom you're looking for. He says you should ask God, who gives this generously without finding fault. He says, and it will be given to you. Why? Why would he give us a godly wisdom? For a righteous outcome. God's wisdom always has a righteous goal. A goal that involves God. A goal that will glorify God. A goal that will display his holiness in the end result. Is this starting to make sense a wee bit? When you ask God for wisdom, it may not just be about what you want. Sometimes I do say it, it's not about us, sure it's not. It's about him. There's got to be a bit about us because we're in the decision making. So with all that in mind and all this information that we've got, without God's advice, we can have all the factual knowledge we need. We can have all the insight into what we have. We can have what it takes to see us through. There's a lot of us in here just par through. We can have all of this stuff with a goal at the end of it all. James tells us, if any of you lack wisdom, you should ask God. He doesn't say if you lack wisdom, work it out, get the facts. What can you see? Push through it. James, in his opening few lines here, is saying to make the right choices, to make the right decision, whatever that may be, he says involve God, because when you involve God, there will always be a righteous goal at the end of it. Someone once said this, we make decisions, and our decisions make us. We all make decisions, but our decisions make us. All of us in this room are the result of our decisions we made this morning. Could have made better decisions. Some of you is okay. I'm just having a wee look at you all here. Okay. Shouldn't have worn that coat. Shouldn't have worn that. No, but all of us are where we are today because of the decisions we made this morning. You're here because you made a decision to come to church. All of us are a result of our decisions we made yesterday. All of us are, a result of the decisions we made in the past. Isn't that correct? The decisions you're going to make today determine how you're going to live tomorrow. It's just a fact, isn't it? It's just knowledge. The decisions you make today will affect how you wake up in the morning. Our decisions seem to matter. And that's why, especially if they're important decisions, that's why they're so hard to make. It's why it's so hard to make big decisions as important decisions, because our decisions matter. We have never been in a time, and I don't know about you, this generation, it's not my generation, we're getting on a wee bit, I'm still young at heart, but we're getting on a wee bit, but this generation just doesn't know what it wants, sure it doesn't. We've never been in a time or a place where humanity is so indecisive. They can't make up their minds on the basics. Sure they can't, I'm not going to say anything this morning. But in the basic stuff, they just can't seem to make up their minds. And the problem hits us in the face when we see that stuff, okay? The big problem in this is all, we have choices to make. Too many choices. Does anybody ever think there's too many choices in this world? We've just complicates it all. We've too many options. With the what's, with the where's, the when's, the how's, the yes, the no's, the maybe's, the couldn't be bothered. We have so many choices. And I don't know about you, when I was growing up in our wee house, and we sort of talk about this often, this is why I'm such a plain eater, okay? All we had growing up was minced steak, carrot, and onion. Maybe but no onion. I don't even know what the mince was, because sometimes it was that EU mince. Does anybody remember the EU mince we got at one stage? No? It was in a tin. But growing up, it was normally potatoes or mince. There wasn't a lot of variety. And if you didn't eat your dinner, there wasn't anything else on the table. That was it. There was no other food in that table. So you didn't have a choice. Mom, I don't want that tonight. You know, which we do now. I couldn't be bothered. No, I don't want that. It was on the table. If you had it, you had it. If you didn't, you didn't. With no choice whatsoever. Think about it even now. We have the choice of ordering out, with the choice of going out, with the choice of sitting in, with the choice of making something. We've got choices, 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 and that's just around food. And the one thing that I've learned when I look at this, and it sort of bugs me a wee bit, we have too many choices. Choices make things harder, not easier. Abundance does not make things easier, sure it doesn't. When we have too much of something, it doesn't make our decisions easier. It actually makes our decisions harder. We all have to make decisions in life. And research shows us. Here's what research would say. From the time that you open your eyes this morning to the time you go to bed at night and get to sleep, the average person, will you hear this? I didn't really believe this, and I Googled it a few bit more and looked into it, will make 35,000 decisions today. Any wonder you're tired? You'll make 35,000 decisions. 2,000 decisions an hour you'll make. One decision every 2 seconds. And if you don't believe me, I'm going to show you something. In the last minute, while talking to me, you've been thinking of something else. Who's been there? In the last minute, you'd be going, shoot, I won't, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to. You're making decisions constantly in your mind. While you're listening to me, then again, you'll tune into me again, you'll come out again. Wonder if I should, what's the kid doing, this is what you're doing, wonder what happened, and wonder if I should do this. While you're listening to me, so 35,000 decisions might be a conservative estimate there even. We'll have lots of stuff running through our minds, and all of them, if not most of them, will require a decision or a choice. Think about that for a minute. Decisions and options. Should I? Will I? Can I? Will I? Won't I? Should I? Can't be bothered with that. Need to put the dinner on. What are we doing later? While you're listening to me, so come on, turn around again and go, right, listen to me a wee bit for 5 minutes. We make decisions quite a lot, don't we? We've already seen we've got the tools to make those decisions. We've got our intelligence, most of us have. We've got our intelligence. And that should be enough to work stuff out. That should be all we need. It's our mind and our intelligence. I can work that problem out. I can do something about that. But the big question is in these 35,000 decisions, when should God be brought into that decision making? To the one who gives generously without asking. When should we bring God into our decision making? With all the tools this morning I've just heard, when we heard about this online retailer, we have a lot of tools in ourselves, in our minds. We have a lot of tools that can make decisions, but when should we bring God into the 35,000 decisions we make daily? And if that's our thought pattern this morning, if that's where we're sitting this morning, when should I bring God into our decision making? Maybe we're missing the point of what James is trying to tell us this morning. It's not when we should. He should be in them constantly. I don't know about you, but I've made many choices and many decisions. I've had to weigh up my options. I've had to look if I can afford it, if I need it, if I should, is it the right thing to do? I have all that going on a lot, so I do, and I had in the past. And I think back to the big decisions. I was just talking to Claire this morning about that. The big decisions that we've had to make in life. The ones that would actually cost us something. And there is always a time in this to use my intelligence in this, to use my mind in this. There's always a time to weigh things up. There's always a time to try and justify if I can. There's always a reason to do it. And that, when we start going down that path, that's the dangerous journey we're on. When we think I could justify it, when we think, should I do it? When we're going down that path, it's actually quite a dangerous path to be on. How many times in this room have you said this? If I'd known what I know now, I would never have done it. Wisdom. Knowledge. If I had known what I know now, I'd have never have done that. If I could only turn back time, if I could turn the clock back, how many times have we done things we wish we hadn't? Or even here, how many times have we done things we're glad we did? Double-edged sword there. Generally, and as I make my point, and I'm nearly there, generally as we know, We know not to do certain things, don't we? We know the big stuff we shouldn't do. We know that stuff is wrong. We know that sin is wrong. We know that disobedience to God is wrong. We know that we reap what we sow. We know that some stuff affects us and other stuff doesn't really affect us. We know that what God really wants out of us, don't we? We know the big stuff. We know we shouldn't kill. We know this and that and that. But have we even had this idea in our heads this morning? When James says to ask God for wisdom, does anybody think this? See, when I seek him, I know he's going to answer. See, when I seek God, he will tell me what to do. When I ask him, things will be okay. Nothing's going to come against me. When I go to God, I'm going to know the path to take. When I seek him, he's going to tell me. Does anybody have that mindset? I'm going to tell you you're wrong this morning. I'm not saying God can't show us what to do. I'm not saying God can't show up. But maybe the thought is wrong in what James is trying to say here. If I seek him, he's going to tell me the way to go. He's going to tell me what to do. He's going to tell me when to do it and how to do it. Maybe that's not what James was saying here. Maybe that's not how it works. See, when we come to God and ask, when we start to draw close to him, when we put aside all our plans, listen to me, when we start to surrender stuff, when we start to put him first, when we have this relationship going on, that's a tight one. When he's number one in our lives, when we read his word, when we go to church, when we do all the stuff we're meant to do, and we're seeking God with all our hearts. And then when the road gets shifts, when the road gets foggy, the path isn't the right way, we can't find out where we're going, when the right way, even I'm going to say this, gets less appealing because we're doing it God's way. When we start to walk in obedience, when we obey, like a child would obey their parents, and they're not doing too good of a job of it this morning. When a child obeys their parents, when we start to know God's wisdom through obedience, not through intelligence, not through our study, not through any other means, when we start to know God's wisdom through obedience, in Mark 10 and 14, it says, unless we come like a child, we won't get it. The righteous goal we're looking for just won't happen. It's what James is telling us. When life's hitting you in the head, when life is tough, when you can't understand what the hammer's doing, what life is doing to you, when you have big decisions to make, you're to come to him as a child and know that God is doing something. And he says to find joy in that fact, that God is working out all things for a righteous goal. And the end result of it all, it's for our good and for his glory. Righteousness is the end goal when we ask God for wisdom. And if you don't know what to do, if your mind can't think straight, if you come and ask, know that God gives generously. We've already talked about that. God's wisdom to decide always has an end goal. And the result in the end goal is always this, righteousness. Ask God. Go on the journey. Stop trying to get to your goal and your end result. It's his righteous goal we're after. It's his righteous goal we should be, what would I say, we should seek. Stop trying to work it out. Stop trying to use your intelligence. We're to trust God with all our hearts, one of Claire's favorite verses in Proverbs. Let wisdom direct you, we're told. And if you're still not sure this is right, if you still think I'm a wee bit off here in what I'm saying, listen to Paul, what he says. Paul on his journey comes to this place in life. He was unsure. He didn't know what lay ahead. He didn't know what road to take. And here's what Paul says when he writes a letter to 1 Corinthians. Here's what Paul's words are. After I go through Macedonia, I will come to you, perhaps. This is a man in the will of God. This is a man doing God's stuff. Perhaps, he says, perhaps I will stay with you for a while or even spend the winter. I don't know, he said, so that you can help me on my journey wherever I go. For I do not want to see you now and make only a passing visit. He says, I hope to spend some time with you if the Lord permits it. But I will stay in Ephesus until Pentecost because the great door for effective work has opened to me. And there will be many, he says, who oppose me. Here's the will of God in Paul's life. Here's a guy that surrendered it all. Here's a guy that's walking closely with Paul. Here's a guy that's doing it for God. And here's his words. Paul in the will of God says these words, perhaps I will stay. I don't know. I have no clue what's going on. Maybe a little longer if the Lord permits it. The way is unclear, he says. Wherever I go, I'm not too sure. It's not going to be straightforward. It looks like there's going to be opposition, he says. The essence of what Paul is saying here, the way forwards doesn't look clear. The way forwards, it doesn't look easy. And I don't know about you this morning. God's way is never easy because there's always a righteous goal at the end of it. Here's something to think about. God isn't our magic crystal ball. Isn't that sometimes how we pray? Look, I'm as guilty of this as any is. Sometimes we go to God, I need to know, Lord. I want to find out. I need to know. I need you to talk to me. But he's not our crystal ball this morning. He's not going to tell us everything that's going to happen, and thankfully he doesn't. He's not going to tell us how it's all going to work out. We need to trust him in that. He's not going to tell us what road to take, because I know with our journey, it's always been three or four roads. And each one of them, I think, has been the right road. But I'm trying to find wisdom in that. Lord, what is the right road you want me to take? Something done with the right heart's never wrong, I always say. If your heart's right, it's always the right road. And here's what God does. James tells us, if you lack wisdom, ask God. He gives it generally without finding fault. Here's what God does. He won't give us the answer that solves the problem. He's going to guide us step by step. He's going to talk to us step by step. He's going to show us step by step. And it'll all be out of relationship. It'll be out of relationship. We'll always get the wisdom of God if we ask. It'll be in our daily walk, our daily talk. It'll be in our decision making when we put him first. See, God's wanting to do in you, and I've said this quite a lot from here, God's wanting to do in you before he ever does through you. God's wanting to do something in you. He wants to change us, let's be honest. He wants to do something in us before he ever does anything for him, and we're willing to do for God first, aren't we? We're so willing to want to run and do stuff, and God wants to do something in here first. That's why the road is never clear. God's working in Paul in that verse. So through him, he gets to fully trust him. Unsure of what lies ahead, and here's the reason behind all that. For God to do something in us, he wants us to make us more Christ-like. And when you're more Christ-like, listen, this is the big point I'm making as I finish. When you become more Christ-like, you're going to make better decisions. Is that true or false statement this morning? When you're more Christ-like, and you're getting more Christ-like, and you're getting there, your decisions are going to be far better. It's the righteous goal and the result of godly wisdom. It's a righteous life in him. If we're becoming more like him, we're going to make better decisions. If we're becoming more like him, we're going to make better decisions. And yet we always want God to show us what to do. Show me where to go. Show me, make it clear, just sort it all out for me, would you? And God's saying, I won't show you what to do, but I'll draw you close, and all you need to do is ask. I will give you wisdom that will work it out. Remember Solomon, and this is my last page. Solomon asked God for only one thing. He didn't ask for power. He didn't ask for wealth. He didn't ask for victory over his enemies. He didn't ask for direction. He didn't ask how, when, why, or where. Solomon only asked for the ability to make good decisions that had a righteous outcome. Solomon only asked for the ability to make good decisions that had a righteous outcome, to do what was right. And we know even at the end of his life, he got that wrong. Solomon asked for wisdom, and God gave him everything else because there was a righteous goal behind it. He says in Proverbs, to get wisdom and understanding. Do not forget my words or turn away from them, Solomon says. And this morning as I come to pray, James 4 and 8, will come to you another week. He tells us this, to resist the devil and he will flee from you. But he tells us to draw near to God and he will draw close to you. Why? For the end goal. The end goal is this, the decisions get easier when the choices get less. The goal becomes clearer when God gets all the glory. Let me just pray.